It's just past 8 a.m. on a Saturday and Park Run is in full swing. Park Run is a free 5 kilometre run held at venues across Australia and the world, and runners compete against each other for the best time. On this particular Saturday, 5 kilometres was just a warm-up for a running festival happening in Sydney the following day, with runners planning on competing in a 9 kilometre half-marathon or marathon race. I was actually gearing up for my second half-marathon on Sunday, but skipped today's 5 kilometre park run. I was here for a very different reason.
I work for a program called Think Health, and I'm just working on a story about recovery in athletes and what different people use. Yeah, just something a bit fun.
Yeah, why not? Do you run yourself?
Oh, yeah, I do. I'm doing the half marathon tomorrow, yeah.
Good luck with that.
But first, a bit of context. If you're serious about training for a half marathon or marathon, you can be running anywhere between 30 and 60 plus kilometres a week. As you can imagine, clocking that many Ks can take a serious toll on your body. So in these running circles, there is understandably a focus on recovery. For the uninitiated, recovery is important as you want to return your body to what it was pre-training. Give it time to rest and repair, so when race day rolls around, you can perform at your best.
Recovery is important because your body needs to have some downtime in order to heal.
This is Anna.
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm a massage therapist at Paramount Sports Recovery. There's a lot of muscle breakdown that can occur during really high intense training. You've got to give the body the time to heal that so it can get back out there and do it again.
We'll hear more from Anna a little later. Okay, now fast forward to the real reason why I was at Park Run. In prepping for the half marathon, I've tried compression, massage, ice baths, foam rolling, carb loading, but always wondered how much of an impact any of these methods had come race day. So I thought I would check in with some other runners to see what worked for them. And what better way to do so than getting people to jump in an ice bath?
So what's your name and what time did you do today?
I did 25:18 and my name's Belinda.
And what sort of recovery methods do you normally use after running?
Just mainly stretching, yeah. Use a bit of a roller on my calves in particular. Rest, yeah, and cold packs.
Cold
well.
Packs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this.
Are you going to jump in?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Take my shoes off.
Are you doing the half marathon or the marathon tomorrow?
I'm doing the 9K tomorrow, yeah. No, the only reason I came today is because I knew you were coming with the bath, so I thought that's my excuse to come and run today and then run tomorrow.
All right. So have you used ice baths before?
No, I haven't. Would you like to tell me what I need to expect here?
Yeah, probably a lot of numbers.
Rory was another runner who ran 5Ks this morning and was attempting the half marathon the next day. Rory says he has used ice baths in the past, especially when the running season starts to ramp up.
What time did you do today?
20:57. Wait, just hop in then. It's cold.
So what sort of recovery methods do you normally use, Rory?
Let me just do a bit of stretching. At the start of the season, I do this more because my legs normally hurt more.
And do you think ice baths actually work for you?
They take the pain away a bit, which is good. I get the idea. I don't know much about the science, but that the cold water stops the blood flowing to the muscles, or it stops it flowing around the body, and then when you take it out and it gets warmer, then it lets new blood flow in more effectively. But that's about as far as I know, and I might be wrong, so...
Belinda's friend Kelly also jumped in the bath, which was by now pretty cold as the ice was well and truly beginning to melt.
Oh, Kelly.
Kelly, and what time did you do today, Kelly?
26:35.
Good job.
I think that's a PB, so I'm happy.
Hang on, girl. We've got to get
Holy crap, it's cold.
So have you ever used an ice bath before?
No.
What sort of recovery methods do you normally use?
Stretch. And that's about it. Stretch down.
Have you heard about ice baths before?
Yeah, because my boyfriend's plays league and stuff, so he's always talking about ice baths for recovery, and I've never done it though. But should try it more often. Should come down every week.
So it was Belinda, wasn't it? Yeah. How are you feeling now that you've been in for a couple of minutes?
Yeah, I'm getting a bit numb. Yeah, my feet have definitely really frozen now and wrinkly, as you can see. but I feel good. Yeah.
So everyone had a perception that ice baths were helpful. But what does the research say? I asked Rob Duffield, Associate Professor in Sport and Exercise Science at the University of Technology, Sydney.
It allows a flushing effect through the muscle by basically having vasoconstriction to the periphery. So vasoconstriction is shutting down the blood flow to the periphery and then funneling that blood into the muscles. That's the theoretical argument. There's not really the proof for that. Cold water immersion really works best, it seems, when the environmental conditions are hot. So it helps as a cooling agent following exercise in the heat. When the muscle damage is maybe higher or the extent of use is higher, so an unaccustomed bout. So if you're used to running 10 kilometres and you do a 12 to 15 kilometre effort, that excessive load from training, you know, cold water immersion has benefits there.
So cold water immersion in an Aussie summer, if you're doing a marathon or a half marathon.
Absolutely. Pre-cooling, post-cooling, it's a great option.
For you to really see the benefits of an ice bath, though, you need to stick it out for a good 15 minutes.
Normally, whole body immersion in 10 to 12 degrees for 15 to 20 minutes. So quite substantial cold water immersion. If you go into any professional football team, if you can get 5 to 8 minutes out of the guys, you're doing very well. And if you go into any amateur, if you can get more than 2 to 3 minutes in that environment, you're doing exceptionally well. So what the research tells us about the extent of cold water immersion you need and what people actually do, there's a bit of a difference.
Back at Park Run, I noticed a lot of runners in compression gear. Here's Belinda again.
You've got compression leggings on as well. Do you use compression for recovery?
Yeah, I would do, yeah. Yeah, I did have a calf injury at some point, so I went and got some of these compression tights. And I found that it's a lot nicer to run in. Yeah.
And do you think it actually physically works for you, like the cold packs and compression and that?
Yeah, actually, yeah, yeah.
Full disclosure, I was also in compression tights all day prior to the race in the hope they would do something. But unlike ice baths, there is minimal research to back up compression clothing as an effective form of recovery. Do compression garments have any benefit during exercise?
Again, most of the evidence would suggest no from a research, from crossover trials and counterbalance trials and placebo trials. Most of it is belief. There are some studies that show repeated jumping for peak power and repeated cycling efforts have some improvements in performance with compression garments. But most sprinting, power, jumping, running studies don't show any improvement.
There's another type of recovery that I hadn't heard of until I met with Anna. It's a salt bath. 350 kilos of salt dissolved in a tank that apparently helps sore muscles and helps you to relax. In the name of research, I decided to give it a try.
In the tank, there's 350 kilos of Epsom salt. The water depth is only about 25 centimetres, so what you'll find is that with the amount of salt in the solution, it becomes more buoyant than it is in the Dead Sea. So when you hop in, you will quite literally float very effortlessly on the surface. The whole idea when you're floating is that you don't know where your skin ends, you don't know where the water begins, it's dark, it's quiet, you don't feel the pressure of anything underneath you, so it's an environment where you can really easily lose yourself, which is quite nice. That's the relaxation side of stuff. Epsom salts are a magnesium and a sulfate, so it's a muscle relaxant and a protein builder for your joints, so you absorb a lot of that whilst you're floating, and you get to experience a bit of an anti-gravity effect as well, in that you don't feel sort of anything underneath you. You get the sense of being suspended, which is nice. So you need to have a quick rinse before you hop in, just to get the day off you. So door behind you, showers on the right, toilets on the left.
Fantastic.
Good. Any questions?
Nope. That's it.
Perfect. Enjoy. I'll leave you to sort that side of stuff out.
All right, thanks. I'll see you in an hour. Okay, shower off. And I'm about to get in the tub. So I had a really punishing swim session last night, and I've backed it up with a gym session this morning. So let's see if this bath does anything. Kind of feels... halfway up my calf, it feels, there's a scab on my on my toe that really hurts from it. But now I guess it's time to turn the mic off and relax. This is a kind of really surreal experience. I still, now that I'm out of the tub, I still feel like I'm in the tub. It's like when you go to the beach and you spend too long in the waves and then you go to bed that night and you can still feel the waves. It feels like I still feel a bit weightless and my body is still, like, everything, yeah, it really feels really loose, I guess. I'm not sure it's had any, like, immediate benefit, but I definitely feel more relaxed. My arms are really sore from an arm workout this morning, and, yeah, they, I guess they feel really, really loose as well. It was weird once you were in there and you do float, and Anna was right, you do feel like you can't feel the end of your fingers and your toes. It just all becomes one in this bath. It's like laying down on a mattress, and the mattress being the most supportive mattress ever, but also super comfortable, and like you can't feel the mattress. Like, you just, it's the ultimate floating experience. I'm really thirsty from all the salt. So the next day after the float, I must admit I didn't have that moment of feeling like a new person. But now is probably the time to say that all of this recovery stuff comes down to one thing. You may have heard Rob say it earlier.
Most of it is belief.
Take, for example, another form of recovery, massage. There is no evidence saying massage helps recovery, but Rob says the majority of athletes can't get enough of it.
Athletes love massage, but the proof of it, you know, in terms of scientific validity for recovery, it's not that strong. But show me an athlete who doesn't want massage following, you know, an exercise bout, a training bout, and, well, probably can't find one. So, you know, but although from a physiological or scientific perspective, you'd argue, well, massage has no place because of the evidence, from a perspective of the athlete being ready to train and what they believe in, it's a massive one. So recovery is combining that physiological state with the mental preparation to believe they can train or compete again.
And this is something massage therapist Anna agrees with.
So massage is one of those tools that's awesome for recovery during training blocks, because it works to get a lot of the tension out of the body, works to release a lot of trigger points. And we find that there's that intense perceived benefit by clients because they feel good after having a session. They feel relaxed after having a session. They certainly get up the next day, they can tell that they're looser.
If you truly believe compression or floating in a salt bath or an ice bath or massages work, then they probably do. Rob says that at the end of the day, we are human, and belief is a pretty big driver of success for athletes.
They believe they feel better. They believe that muscle soreness is lower. They believe that their readiness to train or readiness to compete is higher. And that's where the placebo effect comes in.
But before you go stocking up on ice cubes and compression tights, keep in mind that these forms of recovery are what's known as marginal gains. If you think of recovery as a pie chart, Rob reckons around 2% is made up of the methods we have talked about so far. The biggest chunks that will affect your performance are sleep, hydration, nutrition, and reducing your training load when you need to.
We tend to talk about recovery in general as being our big blocks or our big drivers of recovery. So we're talking reducing the training load, so reducing the amount of work you do in the next session, if it's appropriate, making sure you get appropriate nutritional intake, so carbohydrate and protein, immediately after and then in the ensuing couple of hours, and then avoidance of factors that reduce sleep. You know, they're your big three primary drivers to provide good recovery.
And props to our parkrun guinea pigs, most of whom were good sleepers and eaters.
And what about sleep and nutrition? Do you pay attention to that after you've done a race?
Probably not as well as I should, but yeah, I do sort of have a good diet, I guess. I do watch what I eat. I have a lot of protein, a lot of smoothies. I don't eat a lot of rubbish. But sleep, I'm a good sleeper. About 8:30 on the lounge every night. Yeah, I have a good 8 hours every day.
I think sleep's important. If you don't have a good night's sleep, I find I run pretty hard in the morning. So a good night's sleep's good for your running. Yeah.
Prior to, you know, the best power pill in the world, you have a banana. And but after the race, you've trained all week for it, and you tend to reward yourself and have a nice breakfast. Heaps of carbs afterwards.
So whatever recovery you use, whether it's ice baths or a good night's sleep, Anna says it is important that you stick with your recovery methods to avoid injury and to maximise training. It all comes down to looking after yourself.
If you are going to commit to doing a sport, whatever sport it be, know that doesn't matter how much you spend on shoes or how much you spend on your bike, you got to service yourself too. Because if you're the one who's doing everything and you're not servicing you, you're not looking after yourself, there'll come a point in time where you may have an injury and it's going to cost you more in lost time, lost training, than if you'd have just slotted things into place to give you support to help you get through.